But I am also not, you know, Joe Public consumer who has a different view potentially of the attractions industry. And as I see this, this might, you know, solidify stereotypes that I have in my head. And I might say, oh, I'm not going to a carnival. Or, you know, see, look, it's, you know, AT&T says it, so it's got to be true. So it's in a commercial. So I'm not going to take my family to the carnival next year. And that's kind of why I was getting to where we have to make the real life example show that this is an anomaly. This is, you know, this is kind of a funny caricature of the industry, but it's not true anymore.
This episode is brought to you by Funrating. If you work in any area of the attractions industry, whether it's in a theme park, family entertainment center, zoo, museum, aquarium, bowling center, or trampoline park, then you're probably curious how guests at your attraction perceive critical areas of guest experience. The 2019 Funrating Report is the only place where you can see how each of these areas of the industry were perceived across the board and how they compared to one another. Which facility type provided the best service in 2018? Who really needs to improve their food service? And which attraction saw the highest increase in likelihood to return and net promoter score? These questions and many, many more can only be found in the Funrating Report, and this is information that only Amusement Advantage can provide. The Funrating Report can be found at funrating.com, and we have an exclusive offer for Attraction Pros listeners. By using the coupon code ATTRACTIONPROS at checkout, you can save 10% off the one-time purchase of $375. That's ATTRACTIONPROS, all one word and in all lowercase letters. Again, that's funrating.com, coupon code ATTRACTIONPROS. And if you download it, I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration.
Join us as we tackle some of the most important topics facing the attractions industry today and gain insights from some of the top leaders, creators, and influencers from the exciting world of theme parks, zoos, museums, aquariums, and family entertainment centers.
Because this show is created by Attraction Pros for Attraction Pros. I am Josh Liebman, Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage. I help attractions understand and improve their guest experience.
And I'm Matt Heller, founder of Performance Optimist Consulting. I help leaders lead and work with attractions to increase employee engagement and retention.
Now sit upright, hold on tight, and enjoy the leading resource for attractions industry professionals, the Attraction Pros Podcast. Hey, Matt, what's your favorite pizza topping?
Oh, that's a tough one right off the bat.
Yeah, we're just getting right into it.
Jump right in. Favorite pizza topping. Can I have a combination?
I hadn't thought this far into it.
So
sure, why not?
Okay, so if I'm going to go with the literal one pizza topping, I have to go with pepperoni. It's a classic. I love it. At the same time, the more meat you can throw on a pizza, generally without it being too, you know, without it getting away in the way of the cheese, I'm happy. So I will often order like the Meat Lovers pizza with sausage and bacon and, you know, all kinds of different things on it. But if I were to go with just one, it would be the pepperoni. How about you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I randomly literally just thought of that question just kind of off the top of my head. It was very, very random, but now that I think about it, I'm literally the worst person to split a pizza with because it's not that I don't like toppings, but like my favorite kind of pizza is just cheese.
Okay.
And like, if you were to ask, so if I were to be asked what my favorite topping is, it would probably just be extra cheese.
Extra cheese.
Yep. Don't like pepperoni. Don't like meat on my pizza. I like mushrooms not on pizza. I like onions not on pizza. I hate green peppers. I don't know. Like most pizza toppings just don't sound exciting for me.
So remind me the next time that we are together in the same physical space not to go to a pizza joint together.
I'm just going to get my own pizza.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
by the way, did I tell you about my experience in Utah at Blaze Pizza?
No, you did not. Tell me about it.
So Blaze Pizza, this is the first time I had been there. And I've since seen them in other locations, so they are a franchise or a chain. But it's sort of the Chipotle model where you walk in and you kind of build your own pizza and they make it right in front of you and then throw it into an oven and it comes out and it's you know, the real thin Neapolitan type pizza.
And it is very Chipotle-like as far as structure and style. I've been to one once.
Okay. Yeah. So speaking of cheese, you know, of course, they start out with the dough and they put out the dough and then they start piling on the toppings. And the person I was with when I went for the first time said, they'll put as much cheese on as you want. And I'm like, really?
That's the secret.
That's dangerous. So we get up to the cheese station and they take a couple of handfuls of mozzarella and they plop it on the dough and they spread it out and it looks really nice. And then they actually asked, is that enough cheese? And I said, well, if I have the option, take another couple of handfuls and throw it on there. So they did.
Is it ever really enough cheese?
Exactly. That was my point. So they put some more cheese on there and then they put the other toppings on. And it was outstanding because I got to choose how much cheese was actually on the pizza.
And, you know, I think that really speaks volumes to kind of consumer trends in a number of different applications, and food service is certainly one of them. When you can be part of the creation of your experience, you know, you're not just ordering something off the shelf that is pre-designed for you. You are part of it. You know, you own it.
That's right.
I think that's an important thing that a lot of businesses are doing now.
And if there was too much cheese, which again, I don't think there can be, I would be the only one to blame. Right?
Yeah, it's your fault, right? Didn't like it?
They put it together. They were willing to go as far as I wanted to go. Now, probably if it was piled up too high and it would have ruined the, you know, you wouldn't have been able to melt that much cheese in the time that it would take to cook the pizza because it doesn't take very long because the crust is really thin. You know, then they probably would have told me to hold off. But other than that, you know, it was whatever I wanted. And it was good. It was very, very good.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Now I'm glad that I know that secret too. I might have to make it to my nearest Blaze Pizza in the near future.
And since you like cheese and you're a cheese guy, you know, again, you can have as much cheese as you want, and you don't have to muddle it up with all those other toppings.
Right. They just all get in the way of the cheese.
Right.
Well, good. Glad we covered that.
Right.
So. Normally, most of the conversations that we have and the interviews that we do, you know, our goal is to be very evergreen. So if you're listening to this podcast, you know, the day it comes out, it's super applicable. And then if you're listening to it, you know, a year in advance, it's incredibly applicable as well. And there's one thing that has happened, I guess, in the news or in media very recently that I think is worth talking about because it has caused quite a kerfuffle.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think we may have to go back through the archives. Is that the first time that kerfuffle has been used on the podcast?
You know, it might be, but it wouldn't surprise me if if it's appeared in a previous episode. Okay. And so popular phone carrier AT&T, who I'm sure all of us have heard of, and many of us are probably customers. I was for a while until it just made sense to switch to Verizon, but you know, it's not an endorsement one way or the other.
Right.
They started this campaign called Just Okay is Not Okay. And that sentence resonates very well, right? And the first time I saw these commercials, did you happen to catch any of the NCAA March Madness basketball tournament?
You know, I did not catch any of that. I'm not a huge basketball fan, but I realized that a lot of it was happening, like the Final Four was happening in Minneapolis as I flew into Minneapolis.
That's right. You were there at that time.
I was there and I didn't even know. So suffice it to say, I did not see them during that, but I had seen them at other times, a couple of the different versions of them.
Okay. So to paint a little bit picture, you know how like Geico will like release like 50 different commercials at once, like all like kind of like anchored around the same, you know, they did that like surprising, you know, George Washington crossing the Delaware or something like that. You know, what's not surprising, how much you can save in your car, you know, remember those? And there were at least like 20 or 30 different like scenarios in commercials.
Yes. And yeah, I kind of like those because there's like a similar vein and there's sort of a familiarity around it, right? You kind of know what the message is going to be. And I think that's really cool from a branding standpoint. But yes, I've seen some of those.
Yeah. And it shows just like a lot of like creativity, like in their marketing peeps. And so AT&T, during the NCAA March Madness basketball tournament, there were these commercials almost at every single commercial break, and almost every single time it was different. I must have seen at least 15 different scenarios where the refs were announcing, and one of the refs was just terrible, like comically terrible. And just like the banter between the two of them was just like so funny. He's like shouting at the marching band to play Free Bird, and like just going off in a whole bunch of other just hilarious but terrible banter, I guess. And the message was just okay is not okay, which then tied into AT&T's message that, you know, I guess other networks are just okay and that's not okay. Now, as you may have seen, they have now branched off into other topics like okay babysitter, okay tattoo artist, okay auto mechanic, okay doctor. And now our industry has gotten involved as well.
We have, and there's that OK Carnival commercial that some of you may have seen, and I've seen a lot of response to it, where there's a carnival worker loading a mother and a son onto a scrambler, and they're asking, is this ride safe? And he basically says, well, I put it together last night. I think I did OK. You know, and then it kind of goes on to share that same message that OK is not OK.
Right. And the kid goes, well, what if something bad happens? Right. And the guy shrugs his shoulder and he says, we just move to the next town.
Right.
Then it goes into the sales message of just okay is not okay. And then you could kind of see as it like zooms out, the mother and the son are disembarking from the ride, which after watching it a few times, it kind of confused because I thought that the harness was being locked at that time. And you don't actually see them. I don't know. I could be wrong, or I'm getting way too into it. But well, anyway,
I think you need to suspend a little bit of disbelief as we're looking at how a major phone carrier and ad agency portrays our industry, because I'm sure they don't think about those things. Oh, somebody's got to go unlock that for them before they can get out. So yes, I think you might be taking that part a little too literally.
Yeah, I don't think it followed proper lockdown procedures. But anyway, so the kerfuffle that ensued was that this potentially portrayed our industry and the employees of our industry in a poor light. And it suggested that there are low standards for safety and operations at amusement rides or in specific traveling carnivals. So there's been a lot of... I guess, you know, a lot of social media fire that has come from this. And even IAPA sent a direct letter to AT&T, a very well-written letter. Thought it was, you know, thought it really kind of hit the point correctly. But, you know, would love to hear just kind of what are your thoughts on this?
So I would agree that the IAPA letter was well written, and I agree with the intent of it in terms of the overall thought that, you know, we don't want these negative stereotypes going out into the world when there are probably enough negative stereotypes out there anyway. And so, like I said, I agree with that part. My kind of thought was that, you know, looking at the whole span of the commercials, you know, there's one in there about doctors, there's one in there about restaurants. These are the ones that I've seen. And especially the one about doctors, right? I mean, you've got somebody coming into a room, and I don't remember the exact script, but they're saying, you know, basically, is this doctor good? And they're saying, yeah, he's okay. And he comes in and he says, hey, guess who just got reinstated? And he's like, well, not really. We'll figure this out, you know, together or whatever. And so that to me is a pretty, I guess, damning statement about doctors or potentially about doctors. But again, it goes back to okay is not okay. And so I'm kind of conflicted, honestly, about this, because I don't want anything out there that's going to have a negative impact on how people see our industry. At the same time, I think it's interesting that they've shown all these different professions and kind of said the same thing, right? You wouldn't expect a doctor to do that. And in fact, doctors have much higher standards than that. So okay is not okay. Well, from the amusement park standpoint, I would hope that people wouldn't expect that to happen at a carnival or at a permanent attraction. And that we have higher standards and that we want those standards to be known. But I also think that there's that stereotype that, you know, can't be avoided because it was true in some cases, right? You know, not in the recent past, but, you know, certainly that stereotype came from somewhere. And I think part of our responsibility is to kind of look at that and say, you know, how do we make sure that we're not portraying that stereotype, but in real life? Not necessarily the AT&T commercial, which I don't know if that's going to really influence people's buying decisions. But when they actually go to a carnival or they go to a fair or they go to a park, and making sure we are as safe as we possibly can be, so that someone would say, oh, that's funny, I see that on the commercial, but the last time I was at a carnival, it was safe. Everybody was, you know, the facility was clean. The operators were really, really kind and courteous. And so the real life example should, you know, outshine what we just saw in that commercial.
Right. Yes. I wholeheartedly agree with everything that you said.
Okay.
And I also had mixed feelings about the commercial when I saw it. I wanted to dig in and see a lot of the response. And when I initially pulled it up, all the comments on YouTube were enabled, and most of them were kind of spewing a lot of hate in the direction of AT&T towards this commercial. And I genuinely think that everyone who has expressed concern about it and about the way that they've portrayed our industry, I think it's validated. I think it's completely justified that they would express this type of concern, especially for those who are that involved. Who are doing it day in, day out, who are super passionate about it, and now seeing just this quick 30-second spot that kind of potentially unravels a lot of the work that, you know, we've done as an industry, right? You know, from safety advocacy, which I just saw, you know, a whole bunch of people from IAPA and throughout the industry were just in DC for a safety advocacy day, that it kind of unwinds a lot of the put in place. So I think that it definitely was controversial from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who were affected by it, the people who spoke up about it, I think that was, like I said, 100% justified to do so. Because it really does kind of dance along the line of some serious risk management concerns. You know, if you really wanted to, you know, pick it apart, you know, there are people, in this industry who will watch this commercial and their mind will go in several different directions, right? As far as just like what else is going on? It kind of like where mine went with, is this proper lockout tagout in this commercial, you know, things as granular as that. Whereas, you know, the general public probably watches this, laughs it off and moves on with their day. And like you said, you know, is this going to affect buying decisions? Well, AT&T's goal is that it does affect buying decisions with your phone carrier, not with the parallel example that it's providing, right?
Right, right.
And then same thing with the doctor or the waiter or the tattoo artist and the mechanic and all of that.
So let me
on
ask
the
you
flip side. Oh, yeah,
go ahead. Sure. You go ahead, and then I'm going to ask you a question.
No.
Okay.
No, we can take a break here. Yeah.
So on that the buying decisions. So let's go back to the doctor one, right? Mm-hmm. So let's try to extrapolate what that might look like. So you see this commercial, and you know, yes, it's for AT&T, and this was a scripted commercial. Does that impact your desire or willingness to go to the doctor?
Right. No, it does not.
No.
But also, you know, even though they kind of made the same joke twice, essentially, in each commercial, going to the doctor is also a very different experience than going to an amusement attraction.
That's true.
Or to a carnival. I would think so in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
and that it's not an option. You know, going to the carnival is optional versus going to a doctor. Now, if we were to rephrase the question and say, you know, is this going to amplify your vetting process when you do go to a doctor? I think that, you know, then that you could say, well, probably not so much, because we can see the tongue-in-cheek element of this commercial. Right?
Yeah.
Right? What do you think?
No, I would agree. I don't think that this commercial would sway me away from going to a doctor if I really needed to. You know, if there was something that I knew that professional could take care of and it would make me healthier, or, you know, make me feel better or whatever, I wouldn't shy away from that. But I am also not, you know, Joe Public consumer who has a different view potentially of the attractions industry. And as I see this, this might, you know, solidify stereotypes that I have in my head. And I might say, oh, I'm not going to a carnival. Or, you know, see, look, it's, you know, AT&T says it, so it's got to be true. So it's in a commercial. So I'm not going to take my family to the carnival next year. And that's kind of why I was getting to where we have to make the real life example show that this is an anomaly. This is, you know, this is kind of a funny caricature of the industry, but it's not true anymore.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it has to do with, familiarity as well. Right. You know, most people, maybe not listeners of this podcast, but most people go to the doctor more often than they go to an amusement park or to a carnival. Whereas us, we probably already...
Okay, I can say I'm the opposite.
Yes, or about even on par or whatnot. So it could be obviously this is a caricature of this experience with the doctor. That's obviously not true, but I'm not as familiar with what it's like at a carnival. So maybe this is, you know, more like what it actually is. So yes, there's that element of it as well. On the flip side, I think that when you look at what the core message of the commercial is, which is just okay is not okay, and whether you're applying it to a carnival or to basketball announcers or to a doctor or to a waiter, auto mechanic, whatever it is, babysitter, that I think it's also something that we're in agreement about. So if you do see that commercial and then it says just okay is not okay, I would think that the reaction would be, yep, that's right. Just okay is absolutely not okay.
Right.
And, you know, the message that AT&T is communicating, I don't think they intended to shed a bad light on the industry, nor do I genuinely think they are shedding a bad light on the entire industry, because they are saying, here's an example among several of an experience where it shows that just okay is not okay, which is now tying into our message of, if your phone carrier is just okay, then that's not okay.
Right. And they're actually not saying, I mean, if you really get into, like you said, the granular nature of this, they're really not saying that this is happening, right? They're
right.
Saying that this is just okay and it's not okay. Right. And I would imagine that the 30 something thousand people that are going to descend on Orlando in November would all be in agreement that say, you're right, okay is not okay. And probably this hit a chord because it is our industry and we don't want it portrayed that way. And we don't feel like okay is just okay. And so we want to, you know, show everybody that we don't think okay is just okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Did I say okay and, you know, enough in that sentence?
I think so. And I think that, you know, kind of tying that in, you know, if you watch the first half of the commercial or the first, you know, 20 seconds, you know, up until, you know, AT&T comes in with their sales message, I thought, like, this is like a 20-second training video. Like, this is a perfect example of how, you know, how you communicate to guests and the way that you are portraying yourself as the operator and the way in which you're that this is a not okay example.
Right. Right. This is not okay.
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, like you saying too, that they didn't say that it actually happened. They presented it as a scenario. And I think if you pay attention to how it was scripted, I think it was very intentional. You know, the little boy says, you know, what if something bad happens? Which is, I guess, kind of nebulous. You know, but at the same time, like, again, ties into kind of this risk management questioning type of thing. You know, he did not present a specific scenario as in what if this happens. Mm-hmm. You know, and granted, yes, the operator's response, shrugging his shoulders, and we just moved to the next town, again, showed that is a not okay example. So I think that, in essence, the writers of the script and the creators of this commercial are in agreement that the standard in all of these scenarios is substantially higher, and that if it's not, you should not be doing business with them. If you see at the end of the commercial, they are somehow unlocking their harness, somehow getting out,
right,
and then leaving and saying, like, hey, like, we're not going to go on this attraction because the operator portrayed an unsafe environment, which I would think we would all be in agreement on as well, that if it does not appear to be safe, then that rider can choose to, you know, to exit it because of the poor way that the operator communicated it.
Yeah, and I think if you extrapolate that out even further, how many times in our lives, our work lives and our personal lives, do we just say, oh, that's okay, it's fine, that'll be just fine the way it is, right? You know, and sometimes, you know, depending on what it is, it might be. But for a work example, for a safety example, I don't think we can ever kind of have that mentality. Oh, that's fine, right? And I know that it gets talked about a lot when you focus on, you know, kind of the physical look of a facility, you know, and you walk by something and you walk by it three or four times. You're like, oh, that's been like that way for a while. That's fine, right? That's okay. And mm-hmm. I think that's where we can take this to the next step is, we can all agree that the way this was handled was not okay, and none of us would want to tolerate that at our facilities. But how often do we tolerate okay, maybe because we're too busy or we've looked at the same thing 400 times and, oh, nobody has fixed that yet, you know, could we follow up on it? You know, so are we saying it's okay to other things that we really shouldn't be saying it's okay?
Yeah, now we're getting deep here.
Now we're getting deep.
What other aspects of our business or our operation might just be okay, or might be just okay, that that could be better than just okay?
And if all of those things were put together as a whole, and you think about the entire guest experience, you know, if they are interacting with fun and helpful and safety-minded individuals, and they go to a, you know, maybe in at an attraction, and they go to a merchandise store, and that person is, you know, really upbeat, and they do a great job upserving and upselling, and that person gets exactly the right souvenir that they need, and then they go to the food location, and that person's great, and the food tastes wonderful, but then they look around and they see, oh, the place looks like it's kind of run down, right? Or, you know, the physical appearance isn't really what it should be. And that's somebody at some point saying, well, it was okay that this part isn't painted, or it was okay that there's rotten wood right here, or, you know, that's okay. We're letting that slide because we have other fish to fry, no pun intended. So I agree, you know, that's kind of the challenge of every leader and every, especially business owner, is not taking that okay for granted, or not taking something as okay when you know that could ultimately impact the entire guest experience.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it ties into something that I like to talk about a lot, which is about kind of, you know, meeting the guest's expectation. At that point, that is kind of like baseline. So if you look at, like, kind of everything that the guest expects when they come, you know, to your attraction, you know, they expect it to be safe. They expect it, you know, to be open. They expect it to be, you know, efficient, clean, well-maintained, you know, friendly, enjoyable, you know, all those things. And that's kind of, you know, that's the baseline of it. And if you meet all of those, that's like a little bit above just okay. You know what I mean? Like you want to make sure that you are meeting all of these expectations so that the guest, you know, has what they anticipated that the standard was going to be. And so that they're not asking those questions like, is this safe? And what if something bad happens? Because that's just ingrained with them. And then, you know, before you can even focus on kind of providing that, you know, that great service and kind of that upbeat interaction that you were just talking about right there, is making sure kind of all of those baselines are covered, you know, to make sure that you are beyond just okay. Otherwise, you know, things start to slip and the perception seems to be below okay.
You know, I agree with that. And I think a lot of times we talk about, you know, people having very high expectations, but I wonder if part of the reason that this hit home is because we know that some people do have that low of an expectation when they go to someplace, right? And they expect the workers to be sully and you know, not caring about safety, or they expect the rides to be unsafe. They expect that because of news articles they've seen, or videos, or, you know, other accounts of accidents, or, you know, again, just other stereotypes. So they kind of expect that that lowest common denominator type behavior from everybody. So I'm wondering if there's some of that, again, that kind of hit home with a lot of us, that we don't want that to be the expectation, right? We don't want people to have a lower expectation. We want them to have a high expectation.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, kind of like how you kind of mentioned at the beginning, that the stereotype, I believe, has starting to diminish a little bit over the last several years. And that, you know, the standard, not just for safety, but the standard for kind of the appearance that the operators are giving off, is that, you know, this is, you know, a comfortable, safe environment. And hey, we are, you know, taking care of you. But, you know, I mean, with that said, I've experienced this at, you know, I don't know if I can think of any permanent installation or full park that I've experienced this at, but there was a couple of years ago, I was at, you know, I'll call them out on this. It's the cluster of rides on Daytona Beach.
Okay.
And I was there and I got on the ride and I had a very similar experience to that commercial where, you know, the ride operator actually like joked about, you know, cars, you know, flying off earlier in the night. And I remember thinking like, this is why, you know, the industry, particularly, you know, traveling installations, have this negative stereotype, because like they're feeding into it. And this guy like really kind of owned the part. Like he smelled like absolute cigarette smoke. He was just like total definition of carny. He was the caricature of a carny, essentially. And like, you know, he was having fun with his job, but he was not particularly portraying this safe environment by joking about, you know, the ride derailing as he's dispatching me on the ride, essentially.
Right.
And so yes, if just okay is not okay, then it is up to us as an entire industry to make sure that the line level staff, the people who are delivering the experience, the people that are, you know, harnessing people into the ride, are the ones who are, you know, promoting that very safe environment. And, you know, and way more often than not do I see the, you know, the better side, the flip side of that coin versus the example that I just gave. But the example that I just gave is way more memorable than a standard experience, which is top-notch safety operations, right? You know, see what I mean there?
Yeah. Totally. So that brings up a couple of questions. Number one, from a perception standpoint, you know, you can look at and we'll just take rides for a minute. You can look at a rides operation and you can look at what the people are doing and you can tell if they're being safe because of your experience in the industry. Would you agree with that statement?
I believe so. Yeah.
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 And I believe I can do that too. And a lot of people in the industry can do that as well, where I think the normal, I shouldn't say normal, the general public, you know, they may see somebody doing something that they may perceive as unsafe, but it really isn't, you know, or, you know, so I think there might be a perception factor here that we need to, you know, also be aware of. You know, that something we may be doing may portray something as unsafe, but it's really not.
And perception is reality. At the end of the day, that it doesn't matter if you are right or wrong. If the guest perceives it in a negative light, they are now the voice that is, you know, that is posting online, that is, you know, sharing negative word of mouth, that is, you know, kind of controlling the, you know, the PR stance, you know, to their degree, to their influence, which of course is just becoming more and more magnified.
Right, right. And, you know, if I'm being totally transparent, you know, many moons ago when I started as a ride operator, we would kind of have some fun with our guests too, where we might have a spare bolt lying around on the ride platform. And, you know, just as people are about to be dispatched, we drop it on the diamond plate and there's this loud bang and they're like, what's that? I don't know. And we dispatch the train, you know, the car, and it goes off onto the track and they're kind of looking around bewildered. And then, you know, the lap bar comes down and everything's safe and they kind of laugh and joke and stuff. And, you know, we did it kind of for our own entertainment. But back in the day, we didn't have to worry about them posting it online or anything, or them taking a video of it. And it was just kind of good, clean fun at that time. But, you know, I think
back in your mischievous youth.
Exactly. But I think that mentality, I think, really has changed and really changed for the better, I do believe. But I also wonder, so you took it on the flip side a little bit ago, and I want to flip it to another side. And that is something that you and I talked about before we started recording. And a ride that we're both familiar with is the Simpsons ride at Universal.
Yes. And we brought this up before we started recording. Yeah, yes. This is also where my mind went when watching the commercial, too, and when thinking about it.
Yes. So if you're not familiar with the Simpsons attraction, there is a scene where it actually shows a ride operator, a young ride operator with, you know, you could tell that they are not very mature and they're reading.
I think his official name in the show is the Pimply Faced Kid.
There you go, the Pimply Faced Kid. And he is reading a textbook upside down. And, you know, he talks about, you know, the highly trained teens that are running this attraction. And I mean, it falls into the exact stereotype that we're talking about with AT&T.
And, you know, the Simpsons ride is unique because that is obviously a ride that was built within the industry with this joke that is being made, you know, in the pre-show right before guests are about to board the ride. And, you know, the kid kind of pokes fun at it, or the character, the pimply-faced kid, essentially pokes fun at the safety of it. But, you know, I don't think it gets as specific or to the same level as the AT&T commercial where the kid says, you know, what if something bad happens? But at the same time, the commercial also doesn't take it to as bad of a level as they could have. So it is kind of interesting to kind of watch that commercial and then think about or think about that Simpsons pre-show where they do say, like, yeah, this is the reputation in the industry that amusement workers are, you know, these teenagers who really don't care that much.
Well, and if you look at the Simpsons ride in general and really the whole area, I mean, it's poking fun at the entire industry.
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely.
And yeah, that from day one when that attraction opened, I loved that about that attraction. Because and nobody is off limits. Disney's not off limits. SeaWorld's not off limits. Universal's not off limits. You know, everybody gets their fun or gets poked fun at. And really, like I said, it's the entire industry. But I think one of the things that is a little different in the AT&T commercial has nothing to do with content, but it has everything to do with distribution. Because the Simpsons ride is at a theme park, right?
And so you've already committed to being there.
You've already committed to be there. You're already there. You're right. It is very tongue-in-cheek. But you're not showing this to a national audience who may or may not have made that buying decision to come to a theme park. So that's the only difference I see in, you know, the Simpsons kind of making fun of the theme park industry and this portrayal in the AT&T commercial is how many people this potentially went out to. And I think that's a big part of the reason that people probably got upset about it too.
Sure. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And, you know, if you look at it, not just from the Simpsons ride, but from the Simpsons show, and it's been, you know, probably 15 years or so since I've like really watched it. But in their first 15 seasons, because it's been on forever, there are several episodes where they actually do poke fun at the industry, which really gave, you know, the Universal Creative a lot of great content for this area and this land. That, you know, kind of kind of walked along the same lines, if not even did take it a lot further, because it's a cartoon and because they had a lot more liberty to do so, and because there was no sales message around it other than pure entertainment. And I don't think there's the same level of outrage on it, because it is, it's the show that decided to go in this direction, and we know that they were doing this for our entertainment, not for sales of a specific product. And, you know, with that AT&T commercial, it probably is playing substantially more, right? And on more channels. And like you said, distribution, that, yes, it probably has a much, much wider audience, which I think then kind of goes back to what you asked in the beginning of, is this going to affect people's buying decisions as far as if they are going to go to parks, if they're going to go to carnivals, and if this does damage the reputation that we as an industry have been working very hard to protect and, you know, and continually improve over the years.
Right, right. And what you were just talking about kind of got me thinking back to my very first days at Universal and going through orientation. And, you know, as they talked about some of the attractions that were there back in the day, and even some of the original attractions where they said, you know, the storyline is that you're doing something and then something horribly goes wrong. You know, so something going wrong is always built into those stories. But, you know, we end it in a happy way so that, you know, people can come back and they can cheer and they can, you know, ultimately have a great experience. So that's part of the storytelling as well. So I think, you know, The Simpsons really embrace that. And again, I go back to the distribution of the AT&T commercial. I think it's just that really hit home. And I think that's what upset people. And I don't blame them for being upset. In fact, I was too. But, you know, looking at it from a slightly different light, I might have a little different opinion.
So with all of that said, as we kind of wrap this up here, what do you think the ultimate takeaway is from this commercial and our response to it?
Well, so I think it goes back to something I mentioned maybe at the very beginning of the conversation, is that, you know, I think this should help us identify the fact that we need to continue working hard to overcome this stereotype in real life, in real time. Again, I agree with the IAPA letter and the response to the actual commercial. But I think if the real life example, if we get rid of that stereotype, then this kind of thing has no play. So I think that's one of the big takeaways. But also through our conversation, I think just understanding that okay is not okay, and then we have to be diligent in every aspect of our business to not allow okay to be okay.
Do you think that the commercial should be pulled?
I don't. Do you?
I don't, especially if, you know, if we kind of tie it in with your argument of, hey, we are the ones who can control what the image is, we as an industry, not just you and I. And, you know, we are the ones to, you know, to help determine and to reinforce the positive image that the employees in, you know, in this industry portray at amusement parks and at traveling carnivals. And that, you know, like you said, yes, if that standard continues to strengthen and continues to evolve, then ultimately that joke only becomes just a meaningless joke, essentially.
Right.
And that was kind of what I think. I mean, it could be perceived as that now, essentially, because if you say, yeah, haha, this is kind of poking some fun at, you know, some carnies of the past, essentially, or here's this, you know, teenager who doesn't care. Haha, that's, you know, that's kind of funny. I don't think that AT&T pulling the commercial would necessarily solve the issue, because I think it needs to come from within, because if the stereotype is being made, it's not just in this one commercial. And, you know, you're just kind of, it's like aiming a fire extinguisher at the top of the flame. You know, it kind of subsides for a little bit, but you're not putting it out.
Right. Well, and I carefully thought about that question when you asked it, because if this should be pulled, then the doctor one should be pulled, the tattoo artist should be pulled, like, pull them all, right?
Right.
If you're going to pull one. And, you know, just again, kind of thinking about, you know, the transparency of it all, you know, is this really the issue, this actual commercial? To your point, I don't necessarily think it is. I think it brings to light something that we don't want to be brought to light. And, you know, maybe doctors are reacting the same way. Maybe tattoo artists are reacting the same way. I don't know. But I do know that, you know, we are very passionate about safety. And I think that's why this kind of got our dander up, if you will, because we don't want the industry to be portrayed that way. And I would agree. I think we need to attack it internally, right? So making sure that everything that you're doing is portraying a perception of safety.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I would love to hear what our listeners think about this, because this has caused a lot of vocal response. So if you've got some thoughts on this, if you agree with us, or if you totally disagree with us, I would love to hear what people are saying. So shoot us a tweet at Attraction Pros and let us know that you're listening, and let us know what your thoughts are on this issue.
Yeah, these are just opinions of two guys who are, you know, in the industry and love the industry, but, you know, we're definitely open to hearing other perspectives as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, while you're doing that, if you could leave us a review as well, we'd love that as well. If you are listening, if you like the show, shoot us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it.
And if you're not listening, then you can't hear what we're saying.
I thought that was going to be the end of the sentence. If you're not listening, and then just dead silence.
Yeah, well, kind of was. So,
yeah.
But Josh, thanks for bringing this up. This was a fantastic conversation. You know, if people wanted to know a little bit more about you and what you do and how you can help people not accept okay as okay, where would you send them?
Best ways to get a hold of me would be either Twitter or LinkedIn. Joshua_Twitter. Oh, geez. Joshua_. Let's cut that.
Yeah.
We're already doing some edits already. At Joshua_Liebman on Twitter or Joshua Liebman on LinkedIn. Those are the best ways to find me on the socials. What about you, Matt?
Well, I would probably say just good old-fashioned email, matt@performanceoptimist.com. Of course, you can find me on the Twitter, the LinkedIn, the Facebook, the Instagram. And I would happily engage with you in any of those spots. But, you know, an email works as well.
Do you remember when the Facebook was actually called the Facebook?
Not specifically, but I do remember that was a thing.
Yeah, it was called thefacebook.com. And then, who was it? Not Justin Timberlake, but the guy who he played in that movie, the Napster guy, said, drop the.
Mm.
Yeah. Fun fact of the day. Anyway, Matt, this has been a great conversation. Always enjoy speaking with you. And to our listeners, please let us know what your thoughts are. Shoot us a tweet at Attraction Pros. And speaking of Attraction Pros, thanks for being Attraction Pros.
Thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Attraction Pros podcast.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Feel free to drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, and make sure to follow us on all the social channels.
And make sure you've subscribed to the show so you can get the latest episodes every single week. Also, if you're new to the show, be sure to check out all the great episodes and guests we've featured in the past.
And if you want to learn more about Matt and Josh and check out the best articles for you to operate your attraction most successfully, be sure to visit us at attractionpros.com.